Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, March 12th, welcome, friends. On Into the Program, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, of course, we start with the breaking news that Chase Utley has been inducted into the Phillies Wall of Fame. Congratulations, Chase Utley. Of course, we'll all start with our favorite Chase Utley memories. You want to kick us off there, Cherry?
I have nothing.
Okay, great. That does it for that part of the program. We're going to move on to our main topic today, movies. The best movies of 2025. By the way, write in with your favorite Chase Utley memories or your favorite movies of 2025. Preferably the latter, because today we're going to be talking with a couple of great critics, our personal Siskel and Ebert panel, Bedatri Chowdhury and Rob DiCristina. We're going to go through their picks there for the Oscars, and also some categories that we invented. And of course, we want to hear from you. What was your favorite movie of 2025? Email studio2@whyy.org. You can call 888-477-9499 if you are watching online. You can drop a comment in the chat. And oh, by the way, I should have mentioned the Oscars are Sunday, which is why we're doing this show.
And, you know, this is your chance to figure out what maybe you should watch leading up to the Oscars, what movies you may not have watched in 2025, but you're like, hey, that sounds pretty decent. But if you're somebody who did watch a lot of movies, we want you to stump for your film.
Yeah, stump.
So call us,
888. What?
What? No, I'm just saying stump for your film. 888-477-9499.
You can't say the word stump.
studio2@whyy.org. No, you said stump. Definitely stump for
stump
for your
stump.
Your,
stump.
Stump for your
Mac
film.
Dad, Micah, stump, stump.
That's
all right.
That's right.
888-477-9499. It's also, by the way, DJ of the day.
DJ of the day.
We will end this program, as we do every Thursday, with a song picked by one of you on the topic of that day's show. Today we're talking about movies, so I guess it could be a song that's related to a big like Oscar contender this year, or it could just be a song about movies.
Or the show. You know, something like that. A show, like going to a show.
Like
a movie is a show.
So, yeah, that's true. That's true. Whatever you pick, it has to basically meet the taste of executive producer Kevin, who will pick our DJ of the day. Email your suggestions to studio2@whyy.org.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Some local news stories.
We have a trio.
Yeah.
Start us off.
Philadelphia Mayor Sherrill Parker is giving her third annual budget address this hour before Philadelphia City Council. And her proposals include new streams of revenue like fees for ride shares and retail delivery services, increased hotel taxes, as well as some new spending. Shout out to the Philadelphia Inquirer for doing a nice preview of the mayor's $7 billion budget proposal. Mayor Parker wants to add a 20-cent per ride fee on ride shares like Uber and Lyft to raise about $9 million that would go to the School District of Philadelphia. This would add to money that they already get from the Philadelphia Parking Authority. She also wants to add a 25-cent fee for retail deliveries from companies like Amazon. So if you ordered something, you would get a 25-cent fee. And this is expected to raise about $15 million to go to the city's transportation fund to pay for street paving and traffic safety upgrades and things like that. Parker also wants to increase hotel taxes about 2% to raise $20 million to pay for an additional 1,000 shelter beds. She wants to spend an additional $200 million for addiction recovery. And so those are the big things, and a lot of things are going to kind of stay the same and roll over into the new budget.
And we'll see what city council goes for and what they don't go for.
But
We did note that little tax proposal that had to do with Uber and Lyft, the other one having to do with Amazon, going after maybe some of these bigger corporations, a little bit of a populist move. Doesn't feel totally in line with what Parker's done in the past, but it did remind us that Governor Mikey Sherrill over in New Jersey gave her first budget address this week, and one of her proposals involved fining large companies like Amazon and Walmart if they have workers who are also on Medicaid. She wants to fine companies $725 per worker each year to raise $145 million to help deal with rising healthcare costs, some of which is borne by the states, of course. So so just looking at some parallels and seeing what other people are doing in concert with what Parker's doing, and kind of getting a sense of, you know, where the political mood is.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, the big argument against the big corporations is that, you know, the state government, federal government has been subsidizing low wages, right?
Right.
By giving people SNAP benefits, by giving people health care when these companies won't do that. And so they're like, hey, we're going to charge you.
Right. So it's a $7 billion budget that the mayor proposed. Uh-huh. Some people have more than $7 billion in their bank account. Maybe not literally, but they're worth it more than $7 billion. Forbes has released its annual list of billionaires. Mm. And according to the Philadelphia Business Journal, there are 16 Philly or Philly connected people on the list this year. The richest person in our region. Were you surprised by this at all? This is what I would have guessed, I think.
Yeah, no, nothing, you know, nothing surprised me.
Yeah. But who was number one on the list? Would you have guessed who was number
one? Well, we talked about him a couple of times. Yeah. His name keeps coming up. Yeah. So,
it's Jeff Yass. Mm-hmm. It was the co-founder of the investment firm Susquehanna International Group, also a political mega donor, which is often why we talk about him. Mm-hmm. Forbes says he is the 28th richest person in the world, worth $67.4 billion. And by the way, the firm's managing director is the second highest ranked Philly person on the list. So obviously a lot of money to be made at Susquehanna International Group. There's also a lot of Philadelphians on the list who have some connection to area sports teams. Mm-hmm. Phillies owner John Middleton, 76ers part owner David Adelman, Comcast CEO Brian Roberts. Comcast owns the Flyers. And the richest of them all, which surprised me a little bit, actually, is Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie. He actually jumped into the global top 500 for the first time. He is worth $7.6 billion.
Wow, that's pretty cool. I have to say, because Philadelphia doesn't really have this reputation for wealth. So when we have that many people on the wealthy list, because we always, you know, when you think of Philly, it's like, oh, the largest of the, you know, the poorest of the big cities, sure. Right? But by the way, we're no longer number one. We're number two now. Houston beat us.
Yes.
But it's nice to think, you know, that Philly has this much wealth. And hopefully it'll trickle down. I don't know what this means. But anyway, it just sort of goes against our normal, you know, broke but strappy kind of reputation.
I was surprised how many people, it surprised me how many people were sports connected. And I think it goes to show that there's just a lot of value in sports franchises these days.
And Philly is a sports city. So,
yeah. But just in general, like the valuation of these franchises, which I assume is being factored into what Forbes is calculating here, because those valuations have gone up so much. Someone like Jeffrey Lurie, who was rich before he bought the Eagles, but not like this level rich, has now become like extremely wealthy through the business of sports. Whereas in the past, it was more like if you're a rich person, you would buy a sports franchise as a plaything and you might lose money.
It makes you a lot of money.
It makes you a lot of money.
By the way, New York has the largest number of billionaires in the world, but we have a number of cities that are in the top. You know, we have the largest number of billionaires. So
America
and America does. So,
Not shocked.
So anyway, third story. Philadelphia has a new museum. It's called the Ministry of Awe. I had to say it like that.
I'm scared.
And it is slated to open on Saturday. It's located inside of the old National Manufacturers Bank in Old City. As Philly Voice points out, there is no money in the building. Instead, they claim their currency is the human spirit.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, the six-story building, it will house an immersive art space with huge pieces, like the giant eyeball that sort of looks down on visitors as they come in.
Huh.
And inside, there are all sorts of oddities from over 100 painters, sculptors, animators, video artists, all based in the city. And some of the exhibits have like green hand signals, which means you can touch it. Others have red eyes, which mean they can only be observed. And their website looks pretty cool. It says, come curious, leave curiouser. So, and there's also going to be pop-up performances at the museum. And it's meant to feel otherworldly. There are a couple of standout pieces include a vault that you can open with your handprint and a sculpture of a man who is standing on his own head. So there you go.
Man, this looks so wild.
It looks
confusing.
Wild. Yeah, it's very wild
looking.
The
woman who's behind this gave a quote to the Philly Voice who says, if you've been to a museum, a theater, a haunted house, a dream maybe, we are not quite any of those things. Look, I yes, yeah, it's very Twilight Zone. I don't think it's for me, but I'm really rooting for them to succeed because this seems like a person just put their weirdness out into the world and took a big swing on their own weirdness. And I love when weirdness is rewarded.
Yeah.
So I hope people will go to this thing, which defies categorization to the point where I can't even quite tell what the heck it is.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that they connect. It does feel like
and I would actually go.
A big bet.
I would actually go. It's $29. I would
probably
go.
What's up with the name? Ministry of Awe. Very dystopian.
It's like you got to say it like.
Feels like Orwellian, the Ministry of Awe.
Yeah, and they say, yeah, it's supposed to feel like you're in a, like, other world. That was the word that was repeatedly used. I would go. I like the Museum of the Illusions as well. You know, and it's another kind of one. It's really cool. I think a lot of young people are going to love it, and it's going to be a place where people post stuff from on Instagram, you know?
Oh, you think it's very Instagram?
Yeah, they have some interesting, you know, pieces there. So some interesting
I'm intrigued.
Movies came out.
I'm also just like a little scared, that's all. Oh, yeah, sorry, you were transitioning.
Yes.
Movies, yeah, we're going to talk about them on the other side of the break. Get your calls in, 888-477-9499. Stop.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
Lights, camera, action. Welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manirin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Oscar season has arrived, and there are so many great movies to choose from. And if you're trying to decide which to watch before Sunday's ceremony, we are here to help.
We're rolling out a red carpet of our own, and we are joined today by two of our favorite critics, Vedatri D. Chowdhury, arts and entertainment editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer. So nice to see you again.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be back.
We're also excited to have Rob DiCristino, columnist at F This Movie and member of the Philadelphia Film Critics Circle. Rob, nice to see you.
Good afternoon.
And of course, you are a critic as well, at home, on the road, or elsewhere. So we want to hear from you as well. What was your favorite movie of 2025? Stump for your flick by calling 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on YouTube or Facebook, you can put your comments in the chat. So before we jump into the categories, I kind of wanted to set this up by talking about your overall takeaway from 2025's, you know, list of movies, and specifically for the Oscars. Did it feel like this was a good year for movies? Did it make you feel like you know, something was left off the table?
Yeah, did these movies suck, Rob?
Yeah, as a slate.
I thought it was a good year.
I thought it was a pretty exceptional year.
Yeah, it's one of the better years we've had in a while. I think there are a couple all-timers in 2025, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
I think also, you know, in terms of the Oscars, what they picked, you know, it tends to be, sometimes the Oscars tend to geared toward a certain type
artsy
of movie.
Yeah.
But I think there was a really kind of nice parody here. I think there was a lot of variety.
Yeah, when you look at the lists, of course, we're going to talk about our snubs because
that's
who we are, and that's that's who we do, what we do. But I think when you look at these lists, you don't, at least I don't look at these lists and say, oh, this film or this person has no reason to be on it.
Yeah.
Like, I think this has been a very strong year.
Good.
Because there have been years where that was like, you're like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, where did this come from? But it felt like this was a good list.
And that's to say the membership of the Academy is also becoming more diverse. In the last couple of years, there have been a lot of pushes to kind of diversify it. Used to be a lot of sort of Hollywood's old guard. Now it's a lot more younger filmmakers, a more diverse, more international group of members in the Academy. So you're starting to see more representation.
Absolutely.
Is good for everybody.
Yeah. All right.
And yet, Native Man's favorite movie did not make the list. Predator Badlands. Okay, so that was
a fun movie.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw that one.
Get your picks in, by the way, studio2@whyy.org. Okay, so we're going to start with the big one. Why Bury the Lead? Best Picture. Vedatri, what's your pick?
So, you know, I was talking to Rob about this, but just before coming into the studio, there's always should win, which I think should win, and there's always will win.
Yeah.
So I am gonna go for my should win.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's this film called Sentimental Value, and it's such, and again, like, I'm so surprised it's nominated.
It's even nominated.
It's not an English language film, and it's,
give us the plot. So people who haven't seen it, give us the plot.
Yes. The plot is there's an aging filmmaker, and his daughter Renata Reinsway, goddess, is a theater actress, and he is making, towards the end of it, he's at the end of his career, he's making a film, autobiographical film, kind of about his mother and his life, and he really wants to cast his daughter, but the daughter-father relationship is very complex, not just as parent-child, but also as artists.
Yeah.
And it's just this beautiful film about parenting, sisterhood, but also art making and the relationship between two artists. Mm. And yeah, it's my favorite film from the year.
So I'm going to set up this clip because most of this movie is in Norwegian, mm-hmm. But we're going to listen to this short clip. And we have one character, Nora. She is talking to Dakota Fanning's character, an American actress named Rachel, about why she turned down a role in the father's film. Yeah. So let's hear that.
Why didn't you want to do the role?
I can't work with him.
Why?
We can't really talk.
We can't really talk.
The tension.
It's a beautiful film. And The Worst Person in the World, which was Trier's movie from a couple years ago. That was my favorite movie of 2021.
And Renata. Renata is,
as you said, goddess. She's amazing in it. But it really is so much about like the power of art. And mm-hmm. like I wrote about the film earlier in the year, and I was thinking about like the way we sometimes use art to process feelings and process emotions and process ideas, which is a lot of what Stellan Skarsgård's mm-hmm. character is doing. But the way that can sometimes feel like a crutch to the people who love us, where we're making, you think about like, you know, Bob Dylan, these great artists who are like, they made this great art based on these things that happened to them in their lives, mm-hmm. but it didn't heal the relationship with the person, you know, it is sort of an interesting type of catharsis that's different.
Yeah. And then you talk so much about artists and the person, how can you remove one from the other?
Right.
And this kind of looks into that whole messy thing that you
it's a great film. It's a really interesting movie.
So the father is played by Stellan Skarsgård, who mm-hmm. has multiple kids, right?
Who are also actors, right?
Yes. So there's like a little life and art thing going
and
on.
And speaking of Predator Badlands, Dakota Fanning.
bringing that back into it.
Yeah. She's wonderful in the movie as the American actress who Skarsgård brings in to take the place of his daughter, who is aware that she's not right for the role.
Right.
It's actually a really cool commentary on the way an actor can and can't embody a person who's it's like, I can tell this is a real person. I'm not right for this role. She's really good in it.
Yeah. So and then but she wants to do this because she wants to work with this filmmaker.
Right. All right, so Rob, we got to get your pick now for best picture of the year.
So mine's a little bit more conventional.
This is probably the Will win.
And I hate to be sort of, you know, cliche about it, but my pick is Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another. I don't think it's just the best movie of 2025. I think it's one of the best movies of the
decade.
And
for people who have not seen it, set
if you haven't seen it, it's essentially an aging revolutionary, we'll call him, played by Leonardo DiCaprio, someone who was very active in anti-government activity in his youth, is a single dad. He's raising a daughter on his own, and for reasons that I don't want to spoil, but essentially finds out that they've tracked him down and the daughter has been kidnapped and now he has to find her. So it's a sort of reckoning with his past politics, with his shortcomings as a father. There are a lot of storylines that I don't want to spoil for anybody who hasn't seen it.
But also not giving too much away. I know Leonardo DiCaprio is in this film, but the real heroes of this film are black women.
Yes, 100%.
Tiana Taylor.
Yes, 100%.
Okay, so let's hear a clip. This is a scene where Leonardo DiCaprio's character, Bob, is trying to get a hold of an underground group of revolutionaries, but he's a little rusty and can't remember the code speak. Here it is.
What time is it?
You know, I don't remember that part. All right, let's just not nitpick over the password stuff. Look, this is Bob Ferguson. All right, you just called my house. Let's cut the. I need the rendezvous point.
What time is it?
Look, Steve Lockjaw just attacked my home. I lost my daughter. This is Bob Ferguson. You understand?
Right.
I don't remember any more of this. I don't remember any more of this code speak. All right, let's just get on with. What is the rendezvous point?
It's so interesting that you picked that clip because to me, that's so much of the thesis of the movie, which is about he's trying to find his daughter.
Yeah.
And he's trying to contact his former colleagues, we'll call them. And they're playing spy speak with him. And he's trying to explain that, no, you don't get it. My daughter is missing. I don't have time for your performative politics anymore. And it's so much about like how when we get older, the things that defined us, our ideologies that defined us in our youth, you know, are important still. But also we have children and we have family.
Yes.
We have other things that become more important.
Yeah.
So the reason why the film is so powerful to me as a father and as somebody who's getting older is like it's something about how those two things often
conflict
but also can find harmony again. And I think that the end of the film is
and
so
I think
harmonious.
This film does such a great job of world building.
Yes.
Because it's like it, you know, spans decades.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is when we actually hear what the password is.
Right.
I mean, it's not fit for radio, but but be sure to watch this film so you know what it is.
You know what? I will say this. I didn't see, there's a long list of films that are on Best Picture, but when I watched this trailer, I was like, this is one that I have to go see.
Yeah.
Because number one, I heard all the buzz about it, but the trailer to me just really drew me in. It seems wild.
It's really funny. And you spoke to the cast. I mean, mm-hmm. who are the real heroes. I mean, Chase Infinity as...
But also Guillermo del Toro is the hero.
Benicio del Toro.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Oh, my God.
That would be a very different movie.
Very different movie.
Benicio del Toro is one of my favorite...
We'll talk about Guillermo del Toro in a bit. Yes.
Yes.
The movie is everything. Yeah. It's everything.
So we have any honorable mentions here before we move on to Best Actor?
I mean, there are a ton.
I think all of them are on.
They're all great. Yeah. Okay. So we're going to move on to Best Actor. And there's some big names in this category. But Daughtry, Secret Agent.
Yes.
Is your film. So tell us about the actor. Stump for your person.
Wagner Mora, who most of American audiences will know as Pablo Escobar from the Netflix series Narcos.
Yes.
But in this film... he plays a secret agent. And again, it's set in Brazil. It's set in Carnival time. And he is one of the renegades / defectors. And the fascist government is after him. And they're like trying to look for him. And then he is, in hiding, but is also this huge cinephile. So this film is about... state oppression and fascism, but also about the love for cinema and how
Jaws specifically.
But yeah, it's just this again, like, I think this has been such a good year for like world building, like, you know, creating a world that we know nothing about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this film really takes us to Brazil and talks about, and you know, there are lots of films about authoritarianism and fascism, but to do it in this way, and it's so entertaining. It's a thriller.
It almost felt like a crime caper when I was watching the trailer. Yeah. I was like, is it sort of a heavy political movie?
And
or
it's
or
in Portuguese, by the way.
It is
in
Portuguese.
Yeah, it is a political thing. He is a secret agent, but also, not to spoil anything, he also kind of isn't, you know? And also there is another element, and it's so family-oriented. It's actually very similar to One Battle After Another in theme, which is like the inner family relationship. Mm-hmm. There's that scene where he's with other refugees in the living room and they're all talking to each other and they all come from different places. It's a really wonderful scene.
Yeah, and there's this 80-plus-year-old Brazilian woman. I forget her name.
Yeah, as do I.
She is so amazing. She is one of the people who kind of shelter
him. She's playing like the den mother.
Yeah, she's the den mother. And I think she is the hero of the film.
It's a great year for like naturalistic performances from international diverse casts. Yeah. It speaks to what we spoke to earlier about the sort of diversity of the Academy, that they're actually recognizing these movies, which are made every year, but very rarely get any level of recognition. I mean, the fact that Wagner Moura is up for Best Actor, you know, which is a American award for an American, film industry, we talked earlier, it speaks to maybe his popularity from the Netflix show, but also speaks to just the talent of his performance. This performance is great. It's a great performance.
And so we want to have you now, Rob, give your Best Actor.
So we spoke to the win versus should win.
So yours is the should win, Daughtry.
And I thought earlier, in October, November, when I was writing about the Oscars, I thought for sure that DiCaprio had this locked up for One Battle After Another. Then we started to ride the Timmy train. Now we're on the Timothée Chalamet train. Now we're off of it again.
Yes.
Because
on his doing.
What, because he dissed ballet?
Because he dissed ballet.
And opera.
Yes.
Wait, the voters care about that?
So, well, it's complicated.
The thing is, look, films aren't doing that well either.
Right, exactly.
Whether he's right or wrong.
Where is the brotherhood?
It doesn't affect how well he acted in this film.
They don't like you. And by the way, please set up the film.
Sure. Yes.
Marty Supreme.
So he's nominated for Marty Supreme, which is Ben Safdie? It's one of the Safdie brothers. I can't remember which one. It was the one who didn't do the Smashing Machine, and I can never remember which one it is.
It's Josh Safdie.
Thank you. The talented one.
Okay.
They're very good together.
I'm sorry.
For our listeners.
Wait, what's the whole thing? We're not supposed to be insulting people in genres right now.
I said Marty Supreme is a sports movie by way of Goodfellas. It's a movie about a little narcissist who wants fame and wants international esteem mm-hmm. for ping pong, which mm-hmm. is an up and at the time post war mm-hmm. up and coming a sport, mm-hmm. and he sort of is ruthless in his pursuit of celebrity and
ping pong. It doesn't seem to go, but go ahead.
And it's also sort of an interesting allegory for Jewish American identity as well.
Old New York.
We got a clip.
Yeah, this is a scene where Timothée Chalamet's character Marty Mouser, is it mm-hmm. Marty Mouser, tries to seduce an older movie star played by Gwyneth Paltrow through sheer bravado.
Yes.
Bravado, okay. Excuse me.
Can I help you with something?
Maybe. I just ordered one of everything off the room service menu. There's no way I'll be able to eat it all alone.
Ah. So you'd like me to come up to your room?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps I should send my husband instead.
Oh, sure. He can come up here and I'll come down and meet you.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Whoa, wait, I want to keep talking.
Why is that?
Because I never talked to an actual movie star.
Well, now you have. I hope the experience was all you thought it would be.
You know, I'm something of a performer, too.
Let's talk about Chalamet as an actor real quick.
Attitude there.
Sure. Because, so you guys were saying people have turned on him because he made these comments about opera and ballet.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, well, why would that affect how you view the performance? But then I look at that clip and I'm like, whether or not you buy him as an actor kind of does hinge on whether you find what he does charming or annoying.
Absolutely.
And I think you could go either way. I kind of find it charming, but I guess if I cared a lot about opera and ballet, now I would watch that and be like, what a smug little...
But even before opera and ballet, he's been going around saying, this is my year. I'm going to win the Oscar. Yeah. Like, you know, and...
So he took on some of that personality from that character.
There is a So much of the Oscars is the campaign. It is a popularity contest. Yes. It is Hollywood prom. You're voting for yourself. You're voting for your friends. Like, I mean, it is. You know, it's not a critics award. It's a Hollywood award, right? And I do think he's probably playing up the Marty character, who is this sort of very self-important.
But is he a good actor in this film?
So I'll say this. One of the reasons why I put this on my list and highlighted this as a performance is because this is a performance for me from Chalamet, who is an actor I've always been very hesitant about. He reads Theater Kid to me in a way that is not like... I just haven't never really liked him that much.
He is.
Right. Which makes his comments all the more interesting. Yeah. But this is the level up performance for me where I was like, oh, he can actually do this. And this is something there's a self-consciousness to his previous performances that I always read as a little bit off-putting. Mm-hmm. This is the one where I say, oh, he's leaning into his arrogance. He's leaning into his... smarminess.
And we're going to see now whether or not it worked.
And we're going to see whether or not it worked.
And, like, it's interesting because, you know, from the generation we are, like, Leo was this star who was supposed to get his Oscar on his third film.
Yeah.
But he did not. And then, you know, he waited. And if I am to assume that that's how the Academy works, I don't think he's getting it.
I think there's a groundswell for Michael B. Jordan now that I think he's...
But by the way, Michael B. Jordan played two people.
Exactly.
Yes, he played two people in Sinners. And by the way, we want to make sure we can get to Best Actress. And so, Badatri, make your argument.
Oh, Jessie Buckley for Hamnet. Oh, my.
And tell people about Hamnet if people have not seen
Hamnet
it.
Hamnet is based on a book. And it is, you may have guessed from the title, it's about William Shakespeare's son, who... Can I say? Yeah, it's his...
Yeah,
he passes away.
You could say that. Yeah.
Like,
you could spoil
history.
It's
been a while.
If you ain't seen it, go ahead.
He passes away, and then to get over that grief, Shakespeare writes Hamlet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this film, though, focuses on the mother, Jessie Buckley. And, you know, of course, Shakespeare has, like any other man, has the... opportunity or the privilege to leave his little Stratford-upon-Avon town, go to London and write these plays. But she is sitting at home dealing with the grief
loss,
of losing a son, raising a daughter, also has a daughter. So it's just... And
let us play this clip. In this scene, Jessie Buckley's character, Agnes Shakespeare, is mourning the loss of her son. Take a look, listen.
Poor fool.
No, there's nothing anyone could have done to save her. You did everything that you could.
Of course I did. You weren't here. I would have cut my heart out and given it to him. I would have laid my life down on the ground for him. And no one would take it.
I know.
No, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this Jessie Buckley performance so powerful?
It just wrecks you. Like, I remember sitting still in the theater, not being able to move. And to say that in a film where she shares space with Paul Mescal is a lot. Like, and even he is very good, but she just is, like, all over the film. And, you know, there's this scene towards the end where she is looking at Hamlet being performed. And then she moves towards the stage. And it's her son's story. But, like, you know, in the beginning, she doesn't understand it. She's like, why are they saying my son's name? Mm-hmm. And then she gets it. And it's just, again, like, you know, relationship with art. But again, grief. I don't know the last time I had seen portrayal of grief like this.
And that's a should win. Do you think that's a should win or will
that's
win?
That's a will win.
That's a will
Hopefully
win.
Hopefully both.
Got that. That's hers. That's hers to lose.
So let's get your best actress pick, Rob, before we get to this break.
Yeah.
You have Rose Byrne for If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Yep.
First, describe the plot and then what makes her performance so great.
Sure. If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You is a movie about a mother who's had just about enough.
Yeah. Yep.
It's a
at
movie.
Her breaking point.
It's a movie about a mother who's at her breaking point with her husband, with her child. She has a child who has a special medical need that requires a lot of time, energy. She's out of money. She's out of space. And all of a sudden, a gigantic hole in her apartment opens up. The hole is a metaphor, everybody.
Yeah.
And she has to leave. She's displaced for a while. And the movie is kind of about how hard it can be to just get through day-to-day sometimes.
Yep.
We're staying in a hotel until they fix the hole in the ceiling. My daughter, who has a special illness, has special needs that I need to attend to. I'm also really tired, and I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm trying to... She's a therapist.
Yes.
And I'm trying to help other people with their problems.
But she also has, like, really creepy clients.
She has really creepy clients. Yeah. Conan O'Brien is her therapist.
And by the way, we're going to tee this up.
Yeah,
this is
ahead.
A scene where Rose Byrne's character, Linda, is talking to her therapist, who... you mentioned is played by Conan O'Brien. Take a look, listen.
What is it you think I don't get? What is it you're so sure I can't help you with?
I'm one of those people that's not supposed to be a mom. I'm not a mom. I'm not. This isn't supposed to be what it's like. This isn't it. This can't be it. You say something!
What makes this different? Because I could see a performance like this or a role like this, Rob, being a little one-dimensional. Someone's sort of losing it, you know?
Right.
It's like we've seen that happen before. What makes this better than just someone, like, pushed to the breaking point?
So what I really like about this, and Rose Byrne is an actress that we mostly know for comedies, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What I think, where I think that really comes into play is you have to like her and also be a little bit repelled by her.
Yes.
There's an element of sympathy and also repulsion in this character.
Ooh.
Because she has flaws.
Yeah.
She's not a perfect mom.
So
she's,
her ability to mix in a little comedic acting really takes this to another level.
Sympathy and repulsion.
Yes. Yeah. You know, this is a title of my
autobiography. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
but that scene where she tries to buy substances off of the internet,
and there's a whole whole subplot that I don't. Yes, she ends up on the black market trying to buy some substances, and so much of it is. And again, to go back to this idea of, like, just getting through the day, there are movie plots that can become very convoluted and very sort of extrapolated with lots of high ideas. And sometimes it's just, I need a bottle of wine because my child is making me tired.
Yeah,
and, like, that is so relatable, but it's played up in this high tension way.
Because so many things are happening
at
the same time.
But that's how it feels.
I love it. All right. So we're about to get to a short break. We'll be back with more Oscars conversation, including biggest snub.
And your pick.
My pick.
For the 2025 movie we'll actually remember in 2050. I can't wait to hear this. He has
I've got
been
the perfect
holding
pick
this.
For this one. Okay. So we're going to get to all that on the other side of this break. And also some of your guys' comments and some of your picks. We've been neglecting those. We'll get to a few of those. Don't go anywhere. What's your favorite movie of 2025? Tell us, 888-477-9499, Studio 2 at WHYY.org.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine is helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. Today we're talking about the 2026 Oscar contenders. With us to unpack all the movie magic, we have Badatri D. Chowdhury, arts and entertainment editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Rob DiCristino, columnist at F This Movie and member of the Philadelphia Film Critics Circle.
And of course, you are our third critic today. Our listeners on the road and elsewhere, what was your favorite movie of 2025? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook and you're streaming, put your comments in the chat.
James from Chester County says, I think Sinners rightfully should clean up. And my favorite movie of 2025 was The Ballad of Wallace Island.
What is that?
No idea. It's heartbreakingly funny and a beautiful little film.
No, it's cute. Y'all seen that? It's a cute movie.
Okay. Rob said it's cute.
All right. It's about folk music. It's nice.
I like folk music. Penny says, I vote for sentimental value, but wouldn't be disappointed if it didn't win. There are a lot of really terrific films, a lot of strong performances. Frank, on the flip side of that coin, says sentimental value is boring. Rich people problems, but then again, it was about a movie director, so the Academy seems to love movies about the industry. I Had Legs, I'd Kick You was a much better film about parenting, offbeat and challenging. Okay,
all so right.
Frank and Teddy don't see eye to eye, but we love that kind of...
You're not going to get us to fight, okay? Yeah, it's not going to happen.
It's so, critical tension.
Yeah, and so now we're going to jump into favorite niche nomination, and Badatri, you have chosen Surat.
Yeah. I'll keep it quick. Surat is set in a rave in a Moroccan desert, but is also leading into something like World War III with lots of landmines and lots of drugs.
Lots
of music, which is what brings me to this, is I think Surat's nomination for Best Sound is my favorite niche nom.
Love it.
That's all I'll tell you. Let's watch the film.
Let's hear a little bit. So this is to give you a sense of the soundscapes in this film and just how remarkable they are. Let's listen to a little bit of the trailer from Surat.
Vamos detrás de ellos, venga.
¿Nos estáis siguiendo?
Este coche no va a pasar.
Wow, you can hear everything.
Yeah.
It's almost like Mad Max.
It does have the biggest heart in your chest moment of the year, which won't spoil. The movie takes a turn really fast. It's in a tragic moment. So it's a great movie. Absolutely recommend it.
I love that.
So, Rob, you picked one in the international feature category as your favorite niche nomination. Which one was it?
It was Just an Accident, Jafar Pahani's new film, which is actually going in as France's submission because it was outlawed in Iran. The director's native Iran has outlawed the film, so it's submitted through France. And this is a movie about revenge. It's about the nature of revenge. It's about whether revenge is worth it. It's about a group of people who are tortured by their government, find their torturer, kidnap him, and have to decide what to do with him. Yeah, yep. And it's a beautiful film.
And it's in Farsi, so we don't have a clip for that.
Yeah, but it's a international sentiment. I mean, it's something I think anybody could understand.
Absolutely. Wow. Sure. Universal theme.
Universal.
Right? And so we're going to stick with you for the biggest snub category, Rob.
I have to say, my biggest, I mean, there's a lot of snubs. There's obvious ones like Wicked. Obviously, we talked about that a little bit. The idea of Wicked just getting completely shut out. I mean, and I didn't like Wicked for Good, but...
Yeah, I saw Wicked for Good. Pretty good. Like, I mean, something should have been in there, but...
You would think because of all the nominations last time, it would get something. But my biggest snub is Jennifer Lawrence for Die, My Love, Lynn Ramsey's new film, which I feel like maybe not a lot of people saw. Yep.
I didn't even know she had a movie. And I feel bad because I saw the trailer and I was like, I'm a huge Jennifer Lawrence fan. And it looks so interesting. Tell us the plot.
Yeah, I mean, it's another movie about a mom who's had enough. Okay. I mean, it really is. It's a movie.
This is the year for
moms who have had enough. Yeah. Similar to If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You, it's sort of about a woman who's, it seems like maybe there's maybe some borderline personality disorder issues happening there, but also she has a husband played by Robert Pattinson who is challenging her a little bit, I think. It's a lot of just about the nature of parenthood, the nature of sympathy. She's a writer who doesn't want to write. She's a mom who is on the fence about being a mom. But Jennifer Lawrence is in her like Emma Stone weirdo mode now, which is great, which I fully support. And I just thought she went so far with a director like Lynn Ramsey, who, you know, is famous for pushing actors and really pulling things from them. I thought at the very least there would just be some recognition for that.
Yeah, and let's take a clip. Let's listen to a clip of Jennifer Lawrence in Die, My Love.
That's good. I'm just so grateful to you. I'm taking care of everything and painting the house, taking care of the baby.
Sweet.
Having me committed. You're just the best.
Uh-huh. Okay, Grace.
But I mean it.
Please.
Thank you.
Just don't do this.
Don't do what? I shot a dog. It was in pain.
There's such a difference between Jennifer Lawrence in franchise mode and Jennifer Lawrence in movies like this.
Absolutely.
And that these are where she lights up.
Yeah. Wow. So you had another actually well-known actress for your biggest snub, Badachary. This is from a movie called The Testament of Anne Lee. Who was your biggest snub?
Amanda Seyfried, Allentown's own.
Yeah, that's right. Keep it in Pennsylvania.
That's right. Absolutely.
Play to the house. I love it.
But like a complete 180 from Jennifer Lawrence's character. She plays Anne Lee, who is the founder of the Shaker movement.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is whatever. Like, it's not a big snub that the movie is not in Best Picture, but she is so good. And like, you know, she's shaking a lot. So it's
a lot of shaking going on.
So it's a physical performance.
It's a very physical performance. In a way. We don't see physical performance like that usually. So I just think it was such a trying role. And, you know, this is someone who we've seen in like teenage girly films.
Yep.
So
she's challenging herself.
She's been pushing herself out that box.
Long Bright River.
Long Bright River. Yep. And then this, I think she definitely needed to be on that list.
Go ahead, Amanda.
All right. So let's hear a little bit. This is Amanda Seyfried in The Testament of Anne Lee.
During my incarceration, a sense of release swept over me, and my whole being was suffused with inner harmony and peace. And I feel that all my sins are now forgiven.
I like that. I like that. No, I could see that being at least deserving of a nomination.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Speaking of deserving, we are now going to get into who. This is the category we're calling most deserved. Like the person. Or the thing that got nominated for a category, you're like, absolutely,
they got to get it.
Should have been nominated for this. And so, Badachary, we're going to start with you. You picked someone from the movie Frankenstein, which we have not talked about yet.
Yeah,
so
this is one of the few movies I've seen, so I'm looking forward to your take on this, Badachary. Lay out the.
So my pick for this is Jacob Elordi, who plays Frankenstein's monster. And you've watched this film, Cherry. Like, it is hard to look at a monster and say, look how beautiful this man is. And he is. But just, you know, and it's almost like, you know, anyone of us who've read the book, we know it's about the relationship between the master and the creator, but also father and son, all of those themes. And I think Oscar Isaac, as Dr. Frankenstein, does a fantastic job, but he finds such a good compliment in Jacob Elordi, who, again, we've seen in Saltburn and all these very different kinds of films. But here he plays this monster, but also a monster that you empathize and sympathize with.
Yeah. And we have a clip from Frankenstein from early in the movie where the scientist Victor Frankenstein, played by Oscar Isaac, is scolding his monster, played by Jacob Elordi. Take a look. Listen.
Say one word. One word more. Anything. Make me save you.
Victor. Elizabeth.
Who stops him in his tracks with that there.
Oh, my God. He said Victor a lot. Mm-hmm. Victor.
before we get now to Rob's pick, I want to read a couple comments. Bernice says, my husband and I both saw Sinners recently on an airplane. We agreed the first half was good, but it lost us when the vampires showed up.
Because it was a genre bending. It was genre bending.
And then Gene, again, the theme here of opposites here. Gene says, I love Sinners. I'm a big fan of vampire movies. And the vampires were accurately portrayed in this film. Acting and music, both exceptional. Costumes rocked. Very well done. And with that, I set you up, Rob, for your most deserved.
Set me up for Sinners, because my pick for most deserved is Delroy Lindo.
Yes.
The master. I mean,
best supporting actor.
This is an apology nominee for missing out on the Five Bloods. I mean, they really messed up. It was a COVID year. Who knows? I don't even remember what
happened.
Which was
a really great film.
It was a great movie, but all his work, I mean, Delroy Lindo is, if you don't know Delroy Lindo, yes, you do. He's been in everything you've ever seen. He's the best. And his performance in this is so much of the heart of the movie. We haven't talked a ton about Sinners, but he's...
Can we talk about it a little bit? Can you set us up? Because I just think it's such a great film.
Yeah, I think we haven't talked about Sinners because we both know it's the most obvious choice for all the awards.
Well, because it's the one... I mean, it's a year ago. I mean, it came out early in the season. So many of us have seen it. Yeah, no, but it's two twin brothers who come back, you know, home to open up a juke joint and... Then halfway through, it becomes, From Dusk Till Dawn. Yeah, it becomes a vampire movie.
Yeah.
But D'Orlando plays sort of one of the old guards, one of the old sort of the old heads, you know, the old mentors. And he is just, again, the warmth, the heart, the conviction, the just confidence. I mean, he's just he's just the best. So I was so happy to see a nomination for him. It's so well deserved.
Yeah. Let's listen to a clip, by the way, from Sinners, where Delroy Lindo's character Slim is talking about playing music for white audiences.
We playing a fair amount of blues, too. See, white folks, they like the blues just fine. They just don't like the people who make it. And Pecker Woods was nodding their heads, stomping their feet. Some of them was almost on the rhythm. And the rest, maybe change it up, confuse them.
What did I do with the money?
I drank it.
Ooh, I like that. Also, a good laugh is underrated.
Oh,
it's a good movie laugh. You wanted to say something before we went to that clip,
So, and we had some comments about the costumes for the film. Mm-hmm. Ruth Carter, legend.
Yep.
She has a show that's ongoing at the
African American
Museum.
That's right.
Yeah. And it has costumes from Sinners.
Yes. Yep. And she did Wakanda as well. I just love this film. And I thought, Michael B. Jordan played two characters, Smoke and Stack. It was just beautifully shot. There was innovation with the film. And they're just scenes that you'll never forget. There's quotes you will never forget. Yep. I just love it.
Which is a good setup for our last category here. I want to read one more comment. This is ManzoMan96 on YouTube. It says, very original take, but out of the nominees, Sinners and One Battle After Another were my favorites. I might give the edge to Sinners. Sentimental value was great. Saw it this week.
So, I got to go see that. Yeah.
A lot of love. So now we're going to get to the final category here.
Drum roll,
which is a movie. What movie from this whole class, this whole year, will we actually remember? Cherry talked about the idea of quoting a movie, 20 years from now. We often look back at the Oscars and say, come on, Dances with Wolves over Goodfellas? Like, seriously, guys?
Mm-hmm. I know.
What was happening in the zeitgeist. All right, so all these movies, Rob, which one are we going to remember?
I know I sound like, film guy, but like One Battle After Another. I think it's a generational American masterpiece. I think it's a movie about America. I think it's a movie about parenthood, all the things I said before. Now we're talking about Sinners. I might have to give the edge to Sinners, obviously. But I know from my perspective, as somebody who, sees everything, watches everything, loves film, like, this is a movie. I've already gone back to this 4 or 5 times. Like, this is already a comfort movie for me, a movie I can put on. I already know so many of the lines. I have so much of it. I mean, the Tom Petty drop at the end is like my heart, like, just is.
Ooh, there's
singing.
Tom Petty. Wow. I'll have to get
in
on that.
At the end. Really, oh, yeah.
All right. Okay. But Dodger, get your pick.
Please.
Sorry, again, I must sound like a broken record at this point, but Secret Agent, again, like, just the world building. Like, I really know not much about Brazil and its political history, but this film makes it so fun. And it's also about cinephilia. It's just about someone who loves to watch films.
All right, so you're both wrong.
Yeah, okay, obviously.
Okay. Of course, Avi has been building up to this.
Can I just preface this by saying I haven't seen any of these movies? So I'm coming at it from the perspective of someone who's truly outside the bubble, okay?
Which is most people.
Which is most Academy Awards.
And by the way, and I haven't seen the film I'm going to nominate, but the movie that...
But what are you basing this on? Just vibes.
The culture. It is in the culture in a way where 20 years from now, people are going to remember this film. It's K-pop Demon Hunters.
Oh, sure.
It will be remembered. My daughter is 3 years old.
Yes. I have a niece who was 5. Yeah.
She has not seen the movie. Just by going to daycare, she knows the song is nominated for an Oscar. It's called Golden.
Golden.
She knows the words to it.
Absolutely.
And she will know the words to it 20 years from now. And there's going to be a million copies of this movie, K-pop Demon Hunters. I'm sure they're already in the works.
Absolutely.
They have parties around this.
It's going to be part of, it's going to be the origin of a genre. I'm telling you guys, K-pop.
It's changing a generation.
No, I agree with you. There you go. You're right.
Mic drop.
You're right.
And it's worth noting, when we talk about these things, what will be remembered.
Yeah.
The thing about the internet is there's no monoculture anymore. Yes. We all experience culture completely differently. Film critics see things that nobody else is seeing. K-pop Demon Hunters is the movie that most people talk about. Sinners is the movie that most people are going to talk about remembering from this year. here. I think it just always depends on who you ask.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Go ahead.
You know, and I wonder, like, because we are in this mono, you know, we're not sharing.
We're not all listening to top 40 radio anymore. Yeah.
I mean, do you think there was a film? Do you think there was a performance that did break through that most of us, you know?
I mean, we're talking about Sinners a year later.
Think Michael B. Jordan.
Yeah, Michael B. Jordan and Sinners, I feel like, is probably the one.
All right,
yeah.
Well, let's leave it there.
That's good. So
some thank you. So you made Cherry very happy.
At first I was like, how could they not mention this at all?
It's almost too obvious. Okay. It's the most obvious.
And critics just want to be you. You want to be a little different.
Okay. And we love you for that. Can we say that? We love you for that. Let me thank you both.
Only you.
Tell all your friends.
Thank you, Badatri D. Chowdhury, Arts and Entertainment Editor at the Philadelphia Inquirer. You know you're one of our favorites. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And same to you, Rob. You guys are both welcome back anytime. Rob DiCristino, columnist at F This Movie and member of the Philadelphia Film Critics Circle. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now it is time to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Al, hit it.
You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood.
And that is Celluloid Heroes by The Kinks from 1972.
Singer and songwriter Ray Davies told NPR in 2012 the song is about how in show business, you're only as good as your last record.
Ooh, I love that. Thank you to our loyal listener and commenter, Slow Food, for choosing that song and for being our DJ of the day.
And let me also thank our wonderful producers who really did yeoman's work this week. Debbie Builder, Andreas Copes, Hazel May Bryan, Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show, our executive producer is Kevin McCory, Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us today.
If you covered him with garbage, George Saunders would still have style. And if you stamped on